Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with National Irish Bank. The bank that brought Danske Bank's international expertise to Ireland is now bringing the Danske Bank name.
The protesters who gathered outside Athlone Courthouse yesterday carried placards making suggestions about how best to protect children from sexual predators. Whatever about preventing such assaults from happening, does the state do enough when children have been attacked? The Children's Ombudsman today published a report which finds serious shortcomings in the HSE's treatment of one 11-year-old rape victim and raises troubling questions about the treatment of all children subjected to sexual abuse. Philip Atcher-Hayes has been speaking to the victim and to the Children's Ombudsman. He's here with me. Now, we need some background to this case before, Philip, we look at the issues which have disturbed the Children's Ombudsman.
Maggie, which is the name that I have given to this girl over the course of the 4 years we've been reporting her story. It is, of course, not her real name, but Maggie was raped by a neighbour in 2006 when she was 11 years old. Now, I say that as a matter of fact because it is the assessment of a psychologist that she attended who is expert in these matters that she was raped. But a file went to the DPP and no prosecution was ever brought, so there's no conviction. But the conviction of this consultant is that this 11-year-old told him about the grooming, the assault and subsequent intimidation, and the manner in which she related all of this is so completely credible that it could not have been invented by an 11-year-old. So I say, as a matter of unproven but hard to dispute fact, Maggie was raped in 2006 when she was 11 years old. It was a violent, repeated sexual assault. She was threatened with death, assaulted with a knife. She was left depressed and suicidal. She made several attempts on her life, and her assailant is still at large and living within the community. Maggie has effectively never received therapeutic treatment from the HSE for what happened to her. I've met her, and in my entirely non-professional opinion, she is traumatised. She is still occasionally suicidal and has found the experience of dealing with the HSE one which has only added insult to the original injury.
It made it a lot worse because it was really hard to talk about it and go back over it anyways. But then when it turned out that they didn't believe me, then I felt like I was wasting my time telling people, and I wished I hadn't told anyone to start and just try to forget about it and just let it continue on, that I hadn't told anyone because they didn't believe me.
You would rather almost that the abuse would have continued than to go through not being believed?
Yeah, I would. Because at first I didn't know it was wrong, so it wasn't really affecting me. And then when I knew it was wrong and was told that it could be stopped and I could get help, I was happy that could happen. But then when it turned out they didn't believe me and nothing was going to happen about it, then it felt like I'd just gone through all of that for nothing.
So why, Philip, was she never treated by the HSE?
After the rape, she asked to be examined by a female doctor, which is not a unreasonable request. The HSE, though, couldn't find anybody in her part of the country to conduct the examination. So that examination didn't happen until 5 months after she had first made her disclosure. Not 2 months, has been reported elsewhere today, 5 months, and it happened because of her mother's attempts to secure somebody who would be able to actually do it. It's not clear whether this frustrated the criminal investigation, but it can't have helped matters. And the reason, though, specifically as to why she never got treatment is that after the ordeal of several gruelling interviews with the Gardaí, she felt that she was emotionally unable to go on meeting with social workers or psychiatrists by herself. And she pleaded with her mother to come with her. But when her mother, Sarah, again, not her real name, asked could she attend with Maggie, she was told no. No way under any circumstances, in fact, that she could attend in support of her daughter, even though the alleged assailant had absolutely no connection with the family whatsoever. So a standoff ensued, the immediate consequences of which was that Maggie received no professional support. She ended up making attempts on her life. The HSE was informed of this, but they were still unrelenting in their stance. Her solicitor wrote to the HSE asking them to make an exception. The HSE ignored that letter. Her mother, though she could ill afford it financially, took her to see a private psychologist. Long story short, 7 years later and after 4 serious attempts on her life, the HSE has finally given her one session with a psychologist, but only after the direct intervention of the Children's Ombudsman. So I asked the Ombudsman today, was there any good reason, if you go right back to the start of this dispute, was there any good reason that the mother couldn't be present, or had the HSE taken an unnecessarily inflexible position? And Emily Logan told me that the HSE had a statutory obligation to put the needs of the child first, but that in this case, they had prioritised a dispute with her mother, the consequences of which for the child have been devastating.
The protocol does provide for some flexibility in what is described as, to us by the HSE, as a non-interview meeting, where the child can come accompanied with the parent and develop a relationship, or allows an opportunity to allay the child's anxieties. But there is that flexibility in the protocol, as I understand it. On this occasion, they chose not to offer that to the mother.
Are you, in effect, saying that the HSE focused on its dispute with the mother about the process of the interview and ignored its statutory obligations to the child?
I think that the HSE got distracted by their dispute with the mother, and I think this became the very central issue for them. They, in terms of the instructive language, they described the mother to us as difficult and challenging. And this is not the first occasion where the HSE may say or describe a parent as difficult. What I'm saying as Ombudsman for Children is that that's not good enough. It's not okay, it's not acceptable to say this child's parent is difficult, which means we can't work with her. But you're right, yes, that reflects what I am saying. They allowed the dispute to get in the way of the services that the child should have received.
And what's your assessment of the mother? Is she a difficult person, or is she somebody who's simply trying to do the best for her child?
My assessment of the mother is she's an articulate, capable, able individual. This is a parent with capacity, a parent who is well able to articulate for her child.
Philip, what has been the response from the HSE?
They don't accept, as Emily Logan says, that there could have been any negligence in this case on their part. I put a number of questions to the HSE yesterday, none of which they have responded to directly. They have accepted in general the Ombudsman's report and promised to implement her recommendations. But on the specific questions that I put to them, they've all been ignored. I asked them, did they accept the Ombudsman's view that the delays that they caused had a direct adverse effect on the child, quote unquote, from the Ombudsman's report? That question has been ignored. I asked, does the HSE wish to apologise to the girl? Again, that question has been ignored. I pointed out that the Ombudsman had found that there may be negligence and that there was administrative delay and inefficiency. So I asked, what actions has the HSE taken to find out who was responsible for these shortcomings and what's been done about it? Again, that and many other questions have been ignored, and these are not the first questions over the course of the last 4 years that I have put to the HSE about this girl's case that have been ignored.
It raises the question, does a difficult mother act as a barrier to HSE intervention, despite what Emily Logan has been telling us there about their obligation to put the needs of the child first? Like, is this a one-off case, or is it the tip of the iceberg?
Well, this is very interesting. I mean, this is where Maggie's story becomes the story of the almost 3,500 children who make disclosures of sexual abuse every year. And on the basis of very incomplete figures made available by the HSE, it's no stretch of the imagination to assume that Maggie's story is a far from isolated or one-off one, as you say. In 2011, over 3,300 children made disclosures of sexual abuse. Now, the first step in getting access to any kind of support or therapeutic services is, as we've heard in Maggie's case, to attend this assessment interview, the one that she wanted to go to with her mum. Over 50%, and this is an inaccurate figure because the HSE's figures are only indicative, but over 50% of those 3,300 vulnerable children in 2011 didn't make it on to the next stage. For whatever reason, I don't know why, but Maggie's story would have been one of them. They didn't ever make it any further, so they didn't get any therapy from the HSE, from the state. And that is why the Ombudsman has chosen to highlight this case. Change is coming here. It has to be acknowledged. There's things like joint HSE Garda interviews, which would do away with the necessity for two separate interviews that the child would be subjected to. That is starting to happen, but the distribution of those kind of services is patchy. So if you consider, and this is on everybody's minds at the moment, if you consider any child that is raped or abused today, there is, or there tends to be, an automatic assumption on the part of most people that they are going to receive every assistance that they need after their ordeal. The regrettable fact would appear that there is a high chance that they won't.
But at least when the failures were highlighted, has the HSE done anything to undo the harm that was caused in Maggie's case?
In her case, they actually compounded it and they made it worse. As a result of the direct intervention of the Children's Ombudsman, Maggie, as I say, got this single session with a psychiatrist who reviewed her medication. There is an offer of another one, but thereafter, she has been told by the HSE she will have turned 18 and she will have to go and seek therapy privately, which she has been doing anyway. So after nearly 7 years of dispute, several attempts on her life, her diagnosis of depression, the response has been from the HSE, one session with a consultant and an offer of one more. I asked Emily Logan, did she think that this was adequate given everything that Maggie had been through? Her answer was an emphatic no. I spoke to Maggie's mother, Sarah, about what, in the notable absence of any apology, the HSE was offering Maggie now.
The only thing that has happened is I have had her meds reviewed by a psychiatrist within the HSE, but I had to fight for that again, and I know I needed the backing of the Children's Ombudsman to even get that in the first place.
After 6 years and a Children's Ombudsman's report, what the HSE has done is give you two meetings and kicked the ball to touch effectively by saying, go elsewhere.
Yes, they said that because she will be coming to 18 soon, the best thing to do is put in for private treatment now.
How do you feel about them just washing their hands now of her and her ongoing mental health issues?
To be honest, I don't think I could ever trust them with her health now. For me, I don't mind paying for her to go privately because I don't have the faith in them. I don't trust them to do their jobs properly, and I certainly think with the Children's Ombudsman report, it's going to make it a lot worse for me.
What does she mean by that, Philip, that with the Children's Ombudsman's report, it won't be good for me?
What's troubling about this, and the Ombudsman expressed her disquiet about it to a degree today, is that since Sarah first made a complaint to the Children's Ombudsman, the HSE have done a number of things, none of which can be easily understood at face value to be in the interests of the child. The family inferred from their one and only meeting in the course of the last 7 years with a social worker that if they were to withdraw their complaint that they had made to the Children's Ombudsman, they would get access to the therapeutic services that they were seeking. A social worker separately contacted the family GP seeking confidential information, which the GP refused to pass on. The social worker intimated, it is Sarah's understanding, that consideration was being given to taking Maggie into care. And the same social worker also contacted Maggie's headmistress and told her not to let Maggie back into school without her first going to a psychiatrist. But again, the headmistress did exactly what the GP did there and told the social worker to go swing. Now, look, there may be entirely innocent explanations for all of this, but the HSE haven't supplied them to me. They have, as I said, completely ignored my correspondence with them. And Maggie and Sarah certainly believe that the Ombudsman's criticism of the HSE today has effectively ended any chance of them ever getting services.
And Philip, in parallel to their complaint to the Children's Ombudsman, they made a complaint to the Garda Ombudsman.
They have, and it's been taken very seriously. The relevant Gardaí have taken over a year to submit themselves for interview, and the report that the Gardaí compiled for the Garda Ombudsman was rejected by the Ombudsman. They sent the guards back to the drawing board because they weren't satisfied with the initial response that has taken the guards almost a year to come up with. Now, that very, very rarely happens in Garda Ombudsman's investigations. I won't say any more about it at this point in time while the investigation is still ongoing, except to say that Maggie feels as let down by the Gardaí as she does by the HSE.
How is Maggie? She's 17 now.
Traumatised by what she's been through. Brave girl, she's trying to get on with it, but any kind of normal teenage life has been pretty much eclipsed by what she's been through. She made another attempt on her life earlier on this year, and she is going to need ongoing treatment which we've just heard there, in spite of supposedly accepting all of Emily Logan's findings, is not going to be coming from the HSE. I did just send her a text a little bit earlier on to tell her that the Taoiseach had been talking about her case in the Dáil this afternoon, which she was very, very happy about. She knows now that nothing really is going to make any, nothing that happens as a consequence of the Children's Ombudsman's report is going to make any difference to her life. But she does see that there is potential for difference for other children, other abuse victims who come into the system. This is what the Taoiseach had to say. This is obviously, she was delighted to be mentioned, but it is worth taking note that the Taoiseach says here that the HSE has implemented all of the Children's Ombudsman's recommendations, when in fact the Children's Ombudsman said this afternoon that nearly half, four of those recommendations had not in fact been implemented.
The report relates back to 2006 and 2007, when the young girl involved was 11 years of age. I just want the House to know that the recommendations that were made by the Ombudsman have been carried out in full, following the findings of her report in what was a complex and a sensitive case.
And that report, that was the Taoiseach there, and that report was from Philip Boucher-Hayes, who has been following this story for a number of years.